I think, at least in recent memory, of the U.S. being the big powerhouse in the world, before that, Russia and the United States, you talked about a multipolarity. What does that mean, and what's that mean for agriculture in particular?
Multipolarity just means that there's not one or two countries that are going to dominate the global international political system. So there's not going to be a country like the United States that is the top dog. There's not even going to be a bipolar conflict like between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. Note that that means there's not going to be a Cold War between the U.S. and China either. That's not what I think the future looks like. Instead, I think you're going to see different blocks of rising and falling great powers. So Russia's a great example of a falling great power. Still a great power, still can do all sorts of things, but it's on a downward trend. Brazil, an example of a rising great power. And you're seeing countries that are standing up saying, you know what, globalization, it didn't work as well as we wanted for our country, and we're stronger, we're richer now. We're going to do things to make ourselves more self-sufficient or more profitable, and we're not just going to listen to the global hegemon. We're going to say, no, you have to come in the, let's use Indonesia as an example. You want access to Indonesian nickel? Great, you have to build your factories here to process them and all these other things. We're not just going to send you the raw ore. So that's sort of what a multipolar world looks like. Not one dominant idea or global economic whole, but different competing nations and blocks of nations.
I found it interesting when you're talking about different countries that to put a focus on. I guess top of mind would be Russia, China, those kind of things, Japan. You talked about Mexico and Turkey.
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems with the media environment today is that there's too much. There's too much to keep an eye on. I do this for a living, and even I'm getting exhausted with all the things that you have to keep track of. And that's why I think it's really important to sit down and say, well, what are the centers of gravity? Where is change happening the most? And for me, it's in those rising countries. And Mexico, India, Brazil, Turkey, Indonesia. I may add some countries to that list. I may take some countries off of that list. But right now, those are the places where change is happening the most rapidly. We talk about China because it's huge. And I'm not saying don't pay attention to China, but you're going to pay attention to China even if you don't. It's on the front pages. It's every headline. That's what's going to sell the newspapers. You still have to go to page 8 or 9 if you're lucky to get a story about Mexico that isn't related to the cartels. And even then, it's probably not that sophisticated about what's going on with Mexican politics. And it's way more important to the U.S. farmer than some of the top line things about semiconductors in China. Those are the five countries that I would sort of pay attention to. But that's at a very global macro perspective. Every person, every farmer, every consumer or producer is different. So I would really encourage people to say, okay, well, what are the countries that are most important to me? And I would encourage you to read the newspapers of those countries. Follow the local press, because you'll get way more ground truth doing that than trusting that you're going to get it in U.S. media. No offense.
None taken. As far as the issue of food security and reliance on renewables, how do those two things match up?
I struggle with this myself, and I had a couple of slides in there about how, you know, it seems to me that we have tremendous food insecurity in the world, and yet we use roughly half of the calories that we plant towards energy and towards animal feed and things like that. And both of those things can't be true. We can't be so out of food that we can't feed Africa, and yet we have so much food that we can just afford to have, you know, 50% of what we grow going into the energy matrix. So I don't know what the answer is there. I just think that right now, it's weird. I describe myself as somebody who cares a lot about the environment, and I don't understand when we did this bait and switch to where EVs and, you know, like renewable diesel and things like that, that is the platonic ideal of renewable energy. The best renewable energy is a nuclear power plant. It's probably the safest and most secure as well. That's not the level that we're having the conversation at. We're talking about who is the richest man, who is the most powerful man in the, I shouldn't say the most powerful, who is the richest man in the United States right now? It's Elon Musk. Because he is the personification of what renewable energy is supposed to be. Again, as somebody who would self-identify as green, I see nothing renewable about Elon Musk. There's something is wrong there in the transmission, and we're going to have to figure that out.
Talk to me about the Russia-Ukraine war and how you see this coming being resolved.
Yeah, this is a difficult one. And I mean, I didn't think Russia was going to invade Ukraine, and I didn't think Ukraine was going to be able to resist Russia after it did invade, which just goes to show you, I do this for a living. I've often been wrong, and I've been wrong about this war a couple different times now. It looks to me like Russia is a declining power. I think the Prigozhin mutiny was the first real crack in the edifice of Putin's rule. And I think that we will see Ukraine push back and sort of build itself into a strong Western ally, probably part of the European Union in the long run. I think by 2035, it would be my expectation that we'll probably see Ukraine in the European Union. That said, I can make the exact opposite case. And things in a war can change very dramatically. All it takes is one breakthrough or one errant missile or one, you know, rogue commander doing something crazy to change it. So I would just say don't get complacent about that. I think we've gotten sensory overload from the Russia-Ukraine war, and people just assume, oh, it's going on in the background. It's still the largest land war in Europe since World War II. Its results are going to be absolutely critical. So be following those developments and updating your mental models as things change.
We're talking on 9/11, where certainly we talk about a black swan event. It seems like we've had more than one black swan event in our recent memory. Are there anything you see on the horizon that we should be alert to?
I always struggle with black swans because, by definition, black swans are supposed to not be, you're not supposed to be able to anticipate them. And, you know, speaking of 9/11, 9/11 was anticipated. They had tried the World Trade Center before in the early 90s. Different parts of the U.S. intelligence apparatus had the information about Al-Qaeda. It was just because the FBI and the CIA were squabbling and didn't want to share the information that we couldn't actually avert the catastrophe, which I think is a great metaphor for everything that I'm talking about here. We have everything we need. We have the intelligence. The writing is on the wall for what's happening in the world. The question is just, can we get out of our own way and deal with it? So I don't have any black swans to offer you. I mean, I'm sure that things like climate change or some of the geopolitical competition that I'm talking about are going to create events that I didn't anticipate at all. But in that case, everybody's on a zero footing. The companies and farmers and people who do best in those moments are ones that have taken the time to think about it and respond really, really quickly. I, for instance, work with several different companies and did so before COVID. And the ones that did best, nobody had, a global pandemic is going to disrupt global supply chains. Nobody thought that that was likely. Nobody was prepared for that. But some had at least thought of the possibility. And I saw that the companies that did the best were the ones that said, okay, that was unexpected, but we at least have some inkling that this was possible. Or we had a pandemic planning. Let's dust it off and let's try and implement it versus those that hadn't even thought about it in the first place. So it's a cop-out to your question about black swans, probably in climate change or in some of this geopolitical competition. But I sort of reject the idea of black swans. Black swans just means that you haven't spent enough time imagining the possibilities.
I can really appreciate that. What do you see as with the political divide that we have in the United States right now?
Yeah, this I was incredibly scared to do that part of the presentation because I always joke to my friends, I don't have to do the United States. I cover the rest of the world. I'm a geopolitical risk analyst. But we're in an election year, and I showed a slide there about a recent poll from CNN about how a ridiculously high percentage of Democrats think that Joe Biden is the legitimate U.S. president, and a ridiculously high number of Republicans think he's not the legitimate U.S. president. I mean, I have my own personal opinions on this, but my point to the audience is just that's untenable. If so many Republicans, like the answer to that question is that Republicans think that Joe Biden is a usurper, that he has basically taken over the White House through extrajudicial means, that he is not the legitimate president of the United States. If I thought that about the occupant of the White House, I would probably be screaming and saying, well, what is U.S. democracy? I'm going to go live in Europe or, you know, live in Costa Rica or something like that. So I think we have a real problem in this country about the legitimacy of political institutions, and we're going to have to figure that out. It has happened before. So it happened in the late 60s and 1970s, and Reagan kind of helped bring us back to center. It happened in the late 1920s, and FDR brought us back to center. The other problem is that it happened in the 1850s, and nobody brought us back to center, and a lot of people died for silly, foolish reasons. So I don't think that that's the trajectory that we're on, but we are now, that is now a realistic enough scenario that I have to talk about it, and that's pretty sobering.